Thank you, Mr. Love.
Today I would like to start in a verse in the last chapter of Daniel. The subject I want to talk about today is overcoming. And I want to take it from a little different angle, maybe, because there's many hundreds of scriptures on overcoming. We know that Christ overcame the world, that God gave his only beloved Son to this earth, that he may overcome all. So, but when we go back to the book of Daniel in chapter 12, I wanted to read a little bit of this because there's an interesting point in here. In fact, there's a sentence in this part of the Bible that it seems like it doesn't fit, because he was going through all of the prophecies of the time from the very beginning to the Babylon, to the rule of Babylon, all the way through to the return of Christ. All of the outlines were laid down through that period of time, so we could see what the timing would be through the generations of people and the different kings that rise and fall, the kingdoms that rise and fall, and they give rise to the end time, to where Jesus Christ is going to return and save all of his saints and then save all of the world. So in chapter 12 of Daniel, he says, he goes through this. I'll read a little bit up if we go to chapter 2. Say, many of them will sleep in the dust of the earth, shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. But he says, you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. We sure live in a time like that now. Then I, Daniel, looked and beheld, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river and the one on the side of the bank, other side of the river. And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be till the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to the heaven, and swore by him that lives forever that it shall be for a time, and a time, and a half a time. And what does that mean? Well, he explains what it means. He says, they have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people. So he's talking about a period of time to which is three times, like 3.5 years, which is going to fit somewhere in prophecy in the end time, but the overview of the whole thing is time itself. That's why I want to get to this verse. And I heard, but I understood not. Then I said, O my Lord, what shall the end of these things be? So he didn't really understand what a time and a time and a half a time is. And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed in the time of the end. So he repeated what he told him once just before. But here's the verse that is in here that is interesting, because it has something to do with the time of all time. Through all these times and these different governments and these different worlds that are going to be there from the time of Babylon to the time that Jesus Christ returns. And it says, many will be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So the subject I wanted to talk about today was overcoming, but I thought it was interesting that it was stuck in this ancient prophecy, to where he said, this is going to happen before the end time. He gave him a clue. All of the understandings of the times and the dates and everything that we feel we understand up to a point, and we do know the histories of all of the people that came through, like all the empires, the Babylonian Empire, the Medes and the Persians and the Romans, and all the way down to the time of the end. We know that because we can see it as it unfolds. And all this was told before before just the Babylonian Empire had was there, but the rest of them hadn't come. All of the rest have come in lockstep right down to the end of the time. But in this thing, many shall be purified, and many made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly. So when we look at that word, that where many are going to be purified, it goes into the subject of many will be tried and will overcome. Many will see what the trials are for, and they will overcome what is laid before them. So if we go to Jeremiah 17 and have a look at another verse here, because I want to put some of these together to keep in mind before I get to the example I want to get to. But in Jeremiah the 17th chapter, and we're going to verses 9 and verses 10, and read a couple verses here. When he goes, Jeremiah was saying in verse 7, is blessed is the man that trusts the Lord, and trusts in the Lord, and whose hope in the Lord is. So we have our hope in God. And in verse 9, he says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, and who can know it? So he's laying this foundation that he has ever since the Garden of Eden, that we must overcome the evil. We must overcome this evil heart. I want to give you an example of someone in the Bible that did it literally. He faced it physically. And verse 10, he says, I, the Lord, search the heart, and I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. So the heart is in all of us. The heart we have. The heart is separated. It has good in it, and it has evil in it. But God searches that heart, and he knows what we do. He knows what we say. He knows how we feel. When we pray to God, God knows what you want. God knows what you need. God wants to answer your prayers because he's searching your heart. Many will be purified down through time. Many hearts will be searched. And God is there to give us that search and to give us the blessings in the end. Now, if we go to back a few pages to chapter 10 of Jeremiah, there's another verse here. And verse 23, we know these verses quite well, but this verse says, O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. O Lord, correct me, but with judgment, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. See, he knows the heart that he put in man. He knows the heart that he allowed to be deceived, that is in man. And he knows the ways of man. He knows what we do, and he knows why we do it. But it's for a purpose. It's for a reason. So let's go over to 1 Peter and look at a verse there. If we go to 1 Peter, and in the first chapter, let's look at verses 6 through 8. Wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if you need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations. If you greatly rejoice for one reason, as you rejoice because you see the purpose in the trials, you see the reason that we have the trials. You see the reason we have to overcome. You see the purpose in it, and you understand it. And you want to see how God looks at it. And what he tells you to do is rejoice. The reason he wants you to rejoice is because I'm here. He's telling you, I'm here. You have to suffer these trials, and you have to go through these things that you have to go through as a human being, with the good and the evil, but I'm here. I want you to rejoice. I want you to look up to me, and I want you to thank me for what I've done and what I've given you. So he's given all of his love and all of his mercy into our trials. He wants us all to overcome. And he's going to open a door and open a gate for all of humanity in his time to overcome. In chapter 4 of 1 Peter, is in verse 12, a few pages over, chapter 4 and in verse 12. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trials which is to try you, as though some strange thing has happened to you. But rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings. What he's saying is rejoice in your trials because Christ is there. Christ loves us and God himself loves us. He wants us to win this battle. He wants us to be free from this human nature. And this is the struggle that we're in. But rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. You see, Jesus Christ went through the same sufferings. He gave us an example. He came and walked the face of this earth, and he did it for us. So he wants us to look at ourselves and to look at our lives and to look at how we pray to God and how we look to God and how we believe in God and how much we believe that God is going to help us, how much we believe that he can give us a strength, that he can help us to overcome this. And we rejoice because his love is there. His love is going to carry us through all of this. Okay, I'd like to go to the example I wanted to go to, and it's in the book of Genesis. In Genesis, the 32nd chapter, we have a individual. His name was Jacob. And Jacob was a man that had many problems. So what I'd like to do is I'd like you to read Genesis 32 and verses 13 through 32. And I want you to read and think about this and get the picture of what he was doing. In chapter 32 and verse 13, and he lodged there. I just kind of breaking into a middle of a thought here because he had just left Laban, his father-in-law, and he was moving to go to the promised land. But he lodged there that same night and took that which came to his hand, and it was a present for his Esau, his brother. And 200 she-goats, 20 he-goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, and mince and camels and colts and kine and bulls and all of the things he had. This is a gift he had for him. And he delivered them to the hand of his servants. He was here on the banks of the river Jabbar to pass over before me, but he spoke between drove and drove. As he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, whose are those and whither go you and whose are these before you? You see, Jacob was in a real bind here. His father-in-law didn't like him. He had basically kicked him out. And Esau wants to kill him. So he was between his father-in-law and Esau on the river, and he had all of the wealth that God had given him while he was working for Laban. In verse 18, then you shall say, they be your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold also sent unto my lord Esau, and behold also he is behind us. And so commanded he the second and the third, and all that followed the drove, saying, on this manner shall you speak to Esau when you find him. You will say, moreover, behold, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him in the presence that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure he will accept of me. So he went the present over before him, and he himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night, took his two wives, his two women servant, and his 11 sons, and they passed the ford of Jabbok. So what he did is he sent all of his riches, all of the stuff he had ahead, And then the next step he did was he took his family and he sent them ahead. And in verse 23, he took them and sent them over the brook and sent them over all he had. And in the American Standard Version, that's what it says. He sent all that he had. Everything he owned on this earth, he sent ahead. His families, his servants, all of his wealth, and everything went out ahead of him. And Jacob was left alone. He was there on that river by himself. He had evil behind him and evil ahead of him. And there witnessed a man with him and wrestled with a man with him until the break of day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint and as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." And he says, "I will not let you go except you bless me." And he said unto him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Your name shall be no more called Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince has your power with God, and with men you have prevailed." And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray you, what is your name?" And he says, "Wherefore it is that you dost not ask my name?" And he blessed him there. We have speculated some that this might have been Jesus Christ himself, because of one capital there, which I did a kind of research on it there, and I realized that in Hebrew there isn't a higher case and a lower case, but it could be capitalized through the jots and the tittles, so to speak, of the Greek, because the Hebrew had a similar way to do it. But then another thing that indicates it is verse 30. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And then he rose up and went on. I've got another person that analyzed this. I don't know if you ever heard of Elmer Towns. He's a writer. He'll write about various things. He's mainly just more like of a news media type that writes for churches and that sort of thing. So he asked the question, what is the meaning of Jacob wrestling with God? To best answer this question, it helps to know, among other things, that deep-seated family hostilities characterized Jacob's life. He was a determined man. Some would consider him to be ruthless. He was a con artist, a liar, because you know what went on with the promises between him and Esau. Every place he turned, he was in trouble because if it was him, that's the way he was. He was a manipulator, like the sticks and the cattle and separating the flocks. He knew what he was doing. In fact, the name Jacob actually means deceiver, but more literally, it could be translated as grabber. So that kind of fit him. To know Jacob's story as to know his life was one of another never-ending struggle. Through God promised Jacob that through him would come not only a great nation, but a whole company of nations would come from him. He was a man full of fears and anxieties. We now come to a pivotal point in his life when he was about to meet his brother Esau, who has vowed to kill him. If you go back to chapter 27 and verse 41, Esau said, "Because you have taken my inheritance, when my father quits grieving, I'm going to kill my brother." Last time he saw him. All Jacob's struggles and fears were about to be realized. He was sick of his father-in-law's treatment. Jacob had fled Laban, only to encounter his embittered brother. So what he had is he had a bitter father-in-law behind him, and a brother was going to kill him ahead of him. So as the Bible said, he was alone. He was on that river by himself. He had nowhere to go. Anxious for his very life, Jacob concocted a bribe and sent a caravan of gifts along with the women and children across the river Jabbok in hope of pacifying his brother Now he was physically exhausted and alone in the desert. Witness facing in the wilderness, and he was facing sure death. There was really no way he had that was out of this. There's only one way, and that is God have mercy on him. He divested all of his world possessions. In fact, he's powerless to control his fate. He went to sleep on the banks of the Jabbok River with his father-in-law behind him and Esau before him. He was too spent to struggle anymore. But only then did his real struggle begin. Fleeing his family history had been enough. Wrestling with God himself was a different matter altogether. That night, an angelic stranger visited Jacob. They wrestled throughout the night until daybreak, at which point the stranger crippled Jacob with a blow to his hip that disabled him with a limp for the rest of his life. It was by then Jacob knew what had happened. He said, "I saw God face to face." It's amazing how he didn't know God. So that's another, because God talked to him. He talked to him at the top of the ladder. He talked to him, but probably didn't see him. At this time, if this was Jesus Christ, he did see him face to face. And he said, "Yet my life was spared," as we read in verse 30. In the process, Jacob the deceiver received a new name, and that name Israel, which likely means, it could mean, as a part of the meaning, he struggles with God. However, what is most important occurs at the conclusion of that struggle. We just read that in verse 29, or I don't know if we got that far. He was blessed. God blessed him at the end of that struggle. He gave him his blessings. He changed his name, and he allowed him to go on in his calling. He allowed him to overcome what was all around him. With God's help, Jacob was an overcomer. But what a battle and what a struggle that he had to go through. He mentions a few more things. He says in Western culture, and even in some of our churches and clubs, we celebrate wealth and power, strength and confidence. We look for prestige. We look for victory. We despise and fear weakness, failure, and doubt, though we know that the measure of vulnerability, fear, discouragement, and depression come with normal lives. We tend to view these as signs of failure or even lack of faith when we fail or when we don't feel right. We don't feel like we made the cut. When we don't feel like we're getting in touch with God. We also know that in real life, naive optimism and glowing accolades of glamour and success are a recipe for discontent and despair. Sooner or later, the cold, hard realism of life catches up with most of us. The story of Jacob is a good story to pull us back to reality, because it's a literal, physical fight that he fought. Ours is a little different, but it brings us back to the reality of the fight that we have spiritual. Another Christian author characterized Jacob's divine encounter at the river as a magnificent defeat of the human soul at the hands of God. It is in Jacob's story we can easily recognize our own elements of struggle, fears, darkness, and loneliness, vulnerabilities, feeling empty feelings, powerlessness, exhaustion, and relentless pain. Even the Apostle Paul experienced this discouragement and fears, and we're harassed at every turn. In 2 Corinthians 7:5, I'll just read that. You don't have to go there, but he said, God does not leave us with our trials and our fears and our battles in life. What we come to learn in our conflicts of life is that God offers us corresponding divine gift. He gives us our blessings. It's through him that we can receive power of conversation and transformation, the gift of not only surrender, but freedom, and the gifts of endurance, the gifts of faith, and the gifts of courage. In the end, Jacob does what we all must do. He confronts his failure, his weaknesses, his sins, and all the things that are hurting him, and faces God. Jacob wrestled with God all night. He finally come to the point where he had to face God himself. We all do. We all come to that point. And there might be a time of life. This is a dramatic time, but we can have a dramatic time if we realize a few things. Our calling, we realize who we are and where we're going. Because that is what Jacob knew. He knew who he was. He knew he was called because of the lineage. His bloodline went all the way back, you know, to Abraham and then Isaac and then, of course, him. And he knew that the blessings were to be come down and flow down with him. This was a physical thing. This was something that was done by lineage. This was something that was done by people, by fiat from heaven. We, on the other hand, have a different approach to God. What we do is we are called by God. In other words, God calls us into the king line. That's his calling. He wants us to become kings and priests with him. So we have now what we call a calling. That isn't necessary. Our bloodline doesn't really matter. Our soul's what matters. Our spirit's what matters. So in that, God is calling us to his royal family. And what we do is we went to our baptism and won our birthright. When we went under the water and we come back out of the water, we gave our heart and our soul, we gave everything to God. We told God to take my life and rule me and show me your way. Give me your spirit. That's something they didn't have in the Old Testament. Give me your spirit and guide me. What that did is that gave us our birthright. That made us heirs to rule. We were on our path as heirs to be kings, the heirs to be rulers, because now that birthright belongs to all of us. That's the birthright that we have as God gave us. We don't can't take that lightly. You know, Jacob made, he got the birthright kind of by fiat, but he had the birthright, and God honored that birthright. God is the same way with us. We can be foolish. I think that's why he used a man like Jacob, because Jacob had all of these problems, and all these, he did everything wrong he seemed to touch, because he's probably arrogant, and he probably was dictatorial, so he did pretty much everything wrong, but God gave him his birthright. And the same is with us. If we look and we realize how powerful that is, we will fight, we will struggle, we will wrestle, because we know that God is going to give us what we need in the end. So Jacob is an example that we can learn from this remarkable incident in the life of Jacob, that our lives are never meant to be easy. This is especially true when we take it upon ourselves to wrestle with God, to wrestle with God against his will. We also learn that as Christians, despite our trials and tribulations, our striving in this life are never devoid of God's presence. God always sees us, and his blessings inevitably follows the struggle, which can sometimes be messy and chaotic. Real growth in before God requires struggle. I want you now to go to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew 16 and verse 18. He's talking to Peter. He's talking about his church. And he says in verse 18, "And I say unto you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatsoever you bind in heaven or on earth will be bound in heaven." He gave it, that calling gave him the church that birthright. If we are in the church of God, we have the birthright of Petros, the birthright that came from Jesus Christ, the rock himself. Because in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 4, he says, he defines that. He says, I am that rock. And that, well, he says, that rock is Jesus Christ. That's what set the whole church up. That's what set all of our calling and all of our foundation that we have, that we believe in, that fed them through Peter. And that Jesus Christ is that rock. He's our standard. He's our one that is calling us, and he's going to give us all our lives. In John 16, in verse 23, he says, beginning verse 23, in that day you shall ask me nothing. Verily I say unto you, whatsoever you ask of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Hereunto have you asked nothing in my name. Ask, and you will receive, and your joy may be full. These things I have spoken to you in Proverbs, but the time comes when I shall no longer speak to you in Proverbs. There's a time I've spoken to you in Proverbs, but the time comes when I'll no more speak to you in Proverbs, but I will show you plainly of the Father. In that day you shall ask in my name, and I will say not unto you that you will pray to the Father for you. I will say not unto you, for the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. I came forth from the Father and came unto the world again. I leave the world and go to the Father. His disciples said to him, you speak now plainly. We understand you now. It makes sense. Now you're sure that you know all things. Now are we sure that you know all things and need not that any man should ask you, but this we may believe that you cannot, yet you came forth from God. And Jesus answered and said, do you now believe? Behold, the hour comes, yea, and it is now come, that you shall be scattered, and every man to his own, and every shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. And these things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation. Be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. So Jesus Christ is our master. He is the one that led us and gave us our calling. Our evil natures within us that we have, just as Jacob had, he had his evil natures and he had his good nature. He had his calling, he had his promises. And one thing that he did do, you notice, is once he got that blessing, he stood up and walked right into the fire. He went, walked right up and met Esau because he had faith. He knew that once God was with him, that he had no fear. He kind of left a little bit of that out in there, but he did it. Well, he didn't leave it out because it tells when he walked up and saw his brother welcomed him. So God changed his brother's heart and changed his mind. But our evil nature struggles with God that dwells in us. In John 14:20, Jesus Christ says, I am in you. I am in your being. In other words, I'm there. I'm with you. I live there. I'm inside of you, in that heart of yours. I'm there because you are a special people. You're a chosen people. And I have chosen you, and I gave my life for you. We'll have pains, and we'll have doubts. We'll have trials in our life. Our train will jump the track. Our ship hits the doldrums. Our spirit wanes at times. We feel like we're not contacting. We're not seeing God. We feel like that we're missing out. We feel like that we need to come closer to God. Well, look at Jacob. Because we can be like Jacob at Jabbok. We need to fight our nature. We need to overcome our nature. We need to grab onto Christ that is in us because he's there. You struggle with him. You grab and have him help you through your struggles. And you keep struggling, and you keep trying, and you keep believing, and you keep fighting. until you are blessed.